You don't find many books that can serve up history, suspense, crime, and a love story all beautifully tied together. One such book is Wolf's Mouth. Author John Smolens is a former professor at Northern Michigan University. He helped to found their MFA program. Wolf's Mouth starts in World War II. It follows the story of Italian POW Francesco Verdi, who's held in a POW camp in the Upper Peninsula. John Smolens is with us now from Marquette. Welcome to Stateside, John.
Thanks very much, Cynthia.
I have to tell you, I loved this story. You take us to an episode of Michigan history I think a lot of us have forgotten, the World War II POW camps. How did this whole idea come to you?
Well, like most people, I didn't know about these camps until maybe about a dozen years ago. There was a series of articles in the local paper here in Marquette, the Mining Journal, which discussed one camp in particular, which is in Autrain, which is a little village maybe 20 to 25 miles east of here. And, you know, this is the kind of story that novelists sort of tuck in the back of their minds and say, there's some potential there. And quite frankly, I didn't, you know, sit down and start writing the story right away. But over time, I kept coming back to it. And I do love to read history. And I started to read about the period and learned that there were camps here in Michigan. And I was interested in what the conditions were, how the men were treated, what their response to their experience was. And then really over a number of years, it took a long time to write this book, I finally got to the point where I said, you know, this is the next one that I'm going to work on.
So you actually used one of these camps as the camp for your novel Wolf's Mouth.
Yes. In the UP, there were five camps. In the state of Michigan, there were a total of 32. And up here, the closest one to Marquette, where I live, is in Autrain. So I'm writing about a camp that really did exist. So that is really a part of history. But naturally, it is a novel. The characters depicted in the story are purely fictional because they're both American soldiers as well as European prisoners. The narrator, Francesco Verdi, is a fictional character. He is a captain in the Italian army, who was captured in the north of Africa in 1943. The rest of the characters are purely fictional, but the place is real. Autrain's camp did exist.
Well, I'm interested in your research, John. Did we have many Italian prisoners in Michigan during the war? Because as you point out very deftly in the novel, there was certainly a strong Italian population already in the UP.
Here in the UP, a number of the towns have sizable Italian-American populations, yes. They came here probably several generations ago, in many cases because of the mining. There were certain camps, and I'm speaking about the whole country for a moment, where there were over 170 camps, POW camps, throughout the United States. Most of the camps had a mix of prisoners, a mix coming from different European countries. Some camps, they did tend to group a certain nationality in one place. But as far as I can tell, here in the UP, they really sort of mixed them up. Now, naturally, there would be more German soldiers than the other nationalities. For the sake of the story, I wanted to have just two Italian prisoners, the narrator and his one good friend, Adino. The vast majority of the other prisoners are German. There are a few Poles, a few Hungarians, and one Russian who does enter into the story.
And very fascinating. And I think this is a good time to ask you if you'll read an excerpt, John Smolens, from your novel Wolf's Mouth. And this is kind of early in the story, which is seen through the eyes of this Italian captain, prisoner of war, Francesco Verdi. And something odd has happened. One of the German prisoners has not returned home in time for dinner. So could you read us an excerpt?
Certainly. What we learned from other camps in the U.S. made most of us thankful that we were in Autrain. The Americans weren't the problem, it was the Nazis. They succeeded in taking over a camp, terrorizing any German prisoner who had been a Social Democrat before the war, or anyone who was not convincingly pro-Hitler. There were stories about other breaks that had occurred before I arrived at Autrain. Communication between the five camps in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan was frequent, particularly with Camp Eveleth, which was not far to the east. But there were stories about men walking into nearby towns. Evidently, many of the Americans living in the UP weren't even aware that the prisoners of war were being held in camps out in the woods. So on several occasions, prisoners who entered a town were treated cordially, despite the fact that they were either wearing the military uniform of a foreign country or wearing a prisoner's outfit, which included the letters PW on their shirts and trousers. In such cases, a member of the local law enforcement would be notified by the prison command, and soon the prisoners would be escorted back to camp, often to be greeted as though they'd been on a pleasant holiday. But one break from a Michigan prison had been somewhat successful. Several prisoners escaped, and though most were quickly picked up, two of them were not. It soon became clear that they were on the run with one of the guards. Often, when they were drawing maps in the dirt, there would be speculation about how these three might get out of the United States and return to Europe. Some, who paid little attention to maps, insisted that they could sail from San Francisco and cross the Atlantic. Adino suggested that they might swim to Cuba. I didn't understand why they would want to go back to Europe, at least until the war was over. But then I didn't have a wife and children, like many of the men, and my parents and sister, who wrote to me regularly, seemed safe in their villa in Macerata. I was most curious about whatever possessed the American guard who ran off with these two prisoners.
That is writer John Smolin's reading an excerpt from his new novel, Wolf's Mouth, set in a prisoner of war camp in Michigan, in the Upper Peninsula, right there during World War II. And so we have the history, we have love in the sense that Captain Verdi meets a lovely young Upper Peninsula woman named Kiara, and the love part of the story. And then the suspense and crime elements, you do them so well, John, in the form of the Nazi commander Vogel, who runs the camp. Do we know whether this kind of thing happened, where you had the high Nazi officer kind of keeping order among the prisoners and laying down the law?
Yes. In my research, and this probably was one of the reasons I really became intrigued by this idea, the camps often broke down where a small percentage of the German prisoners were very ardent Nazis, and they did take control, and they ruled in a very iron-fisted fashion. And there were incidents where other prisoners would be injured, and there were incidents where they would be killed. The other means of controlling the prisoners was by sending word back to Germany, threatening families and loved ones and so forth, which they could do through the mail. They were allowed to write back home, and they had various means of coding messages within a letter so that they could get by the authorities, who would look at the mail. That is not fictional. There were instances in many of the camps around the United States where the Nazis really ruled very severely.
That was a surprise to me, and I consider myself quite a student of World War II, but you really do turn it in very, very well to a detective and crime novel, in a sense. Francesco and Chiara eventually get to Detroit, and they become Frank and Claire Green and build a good life for themselves. And I wonder, do we know if that kind of thing happened, where people were able to morph into a real American identity and live under the radar?
Well, after the war, there were, from my reading, about 2,200 prisoners were unaccounted for. Most prisoners, when they escaped, they were returned, or in some cases returned to camps on their own. However, there were just over 2,000 who somehow had slipped through the cracks. In many cases, they wanted to stay in the United States. They changed their identities, and they did succeed in working their way into the fabric of American life. They very often married American women. They had jobs. They had homes. They paid their taxes. They were law-abiding citizens. And in many instances, they remained in the United States undetected for years, which is the case with Francesco, who becomes Frank Green.
It's fascinating. And Francesco really finds himself caught really in the jaws of a pincher, American justice and Nazi vengeance. And I'm not going to give a lot away because it's fascinating. And I didn't know as a reader really where you were going to take me. It's a wonderfully drawn story. And I'm wondering, John, when you have a story like this and it's very lots of twists and turns, do you have a roadmap or a storyboard, if you will, or do the story and the characters lead you?
It's the latter. I have great respect and admiration for writers who tell me that they can sit down and outline an entire novel and then proceed to write it out. I can't do that. I have to sort of find my way in the dark so that I write many drafts. Early drafts, I make a lot of wrong turns. I think usually a story is going well when I feel like it's being told to me and I'm recording it. I think as I've gotten older, I've come to trust the voice of the characters more than when I was younger, and particularly in this case, because this is a first-person narration, I really came to trust Francesco's voice throughout the telling of the story.
You grew up in Massachusetts, John, and I know you came to Michigan in the mid-80s to teach at Michigan State, and then 10 years later, up you went to Northern Michigan University. What has kept you in the UP ever since?
Well, there's a lot of reasons, but I mentioned Lake Superior. I have great affection for Lake Superior. I did grow up near the Massachusetts coast, and when I was a boy, I loved the ocean, and my mother lived on Cape Cod for many years. But I have to say, Lake Superior has a certain spirit that really speaks to me. I'm fortunate to live in a house that's on the bluff overlooking the lake, so I actually can sit at my desk and look over my shoulder and watch the sunrise over the lake at this time of year. And it's also the people. The Upper Peninsula is a truly unique place. Everybody talks about its natural splendors, which is all true. But the people in the Upper Peninsula are, we can endure long winters, and we love to make jokes about that, but I think that that really carries out into other aspects of our lives and the way we relate to each other. And I've considered it home for over 20 years now, and I'm not planning on going anywhere else.
John Smolin's new novel, Wolf's Mouth, and as we were exploring, it's got history, suspense, crime, a love story. I recommend it highly. Thank you so much for sharing your talent and your novel with us, John Smolin's.
Thank you very much.